Hello and a big warm welcome to our September panel podcast. Today I'm delighted to welcome the brilliant Emma Sexton, design entrepreneur, creative strategist, speaker and business coach and all-round legend. Emma started her own creative agency, MYWW, in 2013, providing creative strategy and partnerships for some pretty amazing brands. In the same year she launched her agency, Emma created the UK's only awards for in-house creative teams, the Inside Out Awards, which I'll ask you about later. Having worked with you firsthand, I think your tribe of brilliant female creatives are an absolute joy to work with. And I feel your descriptions as the visual translators for business is just such a spot-on description of what you do and what all businesses need more of. In 2017, Emma was appointed Creative Expert in Residence at King's College Entrepreneurial Institute and in 2018, Designer in Residence at Imperial Enterprise Lab. The reason I thought you would be a brilliant guest for this week's panel episode was that, as well as selfishly wanting to catch up with you, over the last month we've been running a campaign called 20K for 20K. The Greater Than 11% podcast, now in its second series and having interviewed over 100 women and non-binary people, will hit 20,000 downloads in September. So to mark this milestone, we are focused on raising £20,000 to coincide with these downloads, and we'll use these funds to issue small grants of up to £1,000 to provide urgent relief for creatives facing hardship. So, welcome, Emma.
Thank you for that lovely intro. And I really do love the concept of 20K for 20K. I think that's really lovely.
Oh, thank you. Well, Renee, who is usually on our podcast and usually on the panel, has been very busy at work. And actually, for any regular listeners, that's why she's not joining us on this panel like she usually would, because she's busy trying to raise funds for people in need in the creative industry. So that's where she is this week. So Emma, as the CEO and founder of MYWW, a remote first agency, since 2013, I have lots to ask you about your tips for leading creative teams remotely. But before we get into that, I'd just like to start by asking you, how are you today? And how have the past few months been for you?
I'm pretty good, actually. I feel like this COVID chaos, I feel personally, my priority was like, is everybody that I know well and healthy? That was like my number one priority. And through COVID, everyone I know has been well and healthy. So to me, that's the main thing. I think running the business was really hard at the beginning, like that first sort of 4 to 6 weeks, because it was just total chaos. Never known anything like it. And then I think I kind of made a plan and I just surrendered to it all. And I didn't want to spend the time being driven by anxiety and fear. And I was like, this is actually a really unique time to have some downtime. In the 8 years I've been running a business, I've never had, you know, a significant amount of time off. I've kind of seen it as an enforced sabbatical. I've really looked after my mental health. I've tried not to overwork, tried to look after my team, tried to do the right thing by the business. So overall, it's been a pretty positive time, but I think it's been a real measure of my resilience as well. I think running the business has taught me a lot about resilience and mindset. And I think all of those skills have really, really helped me through this time. So I'm very grateful.
I love when we were talking earlier, you mentioned there was a period of time where you and the entire team had a bit of downtime, and that sounds like it was really healthy and recharging given the pace at which I know that you usually work anyway. And it sounds like as well that you've been able to spend some time working on things that you wouldn't necessarily have done normally, like some thought leadership and I think some awards you were mentioning that you'd entered as a result.
Yeah, so I basically took the whole of July off and made my team do the same. I think, you know, I was looking at the business impact, but then I was also looking at the people impact. I've always run my business with like a team first mentality. Like, I know you're a client, but I've always been like, if I have a happy team, by default, I'll have happy clients. And I think I could see what was going on and what a difficult time it had been for everybody. You know, one of my team is homeschooling. July was kind of the point that we got to where it all kind of calmed a bit. So, and I just every week having check-ins in the team, and I was like, right, what's the theme of this month? We were kind of living kind of week to week, month to month. We made July, the theme was rest and restoration. And I think that was a really good call, where I know other agencies were frantic on the new business. And, you know, we stopped, we paused, because I wanted all of us to be ready for action and excited when things do eventually start to pick up. If they do, when they do, who knows?
And could you talk little bit more about that. So tell me what a kind of month themed around rest and restoration looks like, other than taking some time out. Were there any other things that you did?
It was much more about just making sure that the team were offline as much as possible. So there were a couple of things that needed to be kind of, you know, ticked along, but it was absolutely like stay offline. Like nobody was expected to be on high alert. People were actively going, I'm not going to be online today. And just to, yeah, to just no work, like just no work. Because, you know, there's never ending work here. Like if it's not client projects, it's marketing you need to do, updating your credentials, your website, content stuff. Like you can create an awful lot of work. And it literally was like down tools, nothing. Go and enjoy the weather, go and do what you can. And that was it, really. There were no big rules.
I love that you've done that. I'm a bit sad looking back. I kind of just think of the last few months as a blur of being inside in front of my laptop. And even just thinking about now as we head into, I guess, the final quarter-ish of the year, where the nights get a bit longer and it gets darker. And without any kind of glimmer of hope of leaving the UK anytime soon, I'm actually mourning a little bit, just being able to have spent kind of days out in the sun or just had that time. And I don't know if I think it's so important to do that. So it's great that you were able to establish that environment for your team and encourage it. Because I already know that I'll look back, and I imagine Chris maybe feels the same, just that we could have made more of it. You know, we could have traveled somewhere and made the most of working remotely versus just like having the same life effectively, but just being in our office at home. But hopefully we'll have a nicer home as a result to show, because we have been doing housework and stuff.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing. It's a really unique time. And I don't think anybody can give themselves a hard time about the decisions you've made or what you've done. Like you have to be super kind to yourself, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. I have been very tempted though, when there have been those kind of Instagram ads showing that, you know, you don't need a work visa to go and live in the Bahamas.
Barbados, wasn't it?
Barbados, that was it. Yeah, exactly. That did look very tempting. So the next question that I wanted to ask you was actually just on the topic of creativity, because Greater Than 11% is all about celebrating incredible women within the creative industries. And again, I touched on it a little bit earlier, but how have you been feeding your own creativity over the last few months where there's been slightly less external stimulus?
I think as a creative person, you're kind of naturally curious. So I always feel like it's innate. I think for me, my creativity has really been about thinking laterally about the business. You know, I've had to, you know, one, there's the, okay, how am I going to make the numbers work? How am I going to, you know, make sure that we're being paid? How can we use furlough? You know, so there's all that kind of creative problem solving. And I think, you know, in the past couple of months, what I've then been looking at is, okay, as a business, what can we leverage? So I've been thinking creatively about, you know, what online courses can we create? How can we package ourselves up differently? What is the, looking at what our clients are facing, what's going on, like how do we talk differently? So for me, running the business, my role, I feel like you just have to keep curious, don't you? You have to keep reading stuff. And I think that's one of the amazing things about the internet is even if you are locked inside your house, it doesn't stop you from discovering, from learning, from, you know, from sharing. So I think for me, it's just an innate curiosity. It you know, COVID didn't stop that. I think it just shifted the things that I was looking at, possibly. Definitely.
That's such a lovely, yeah, such a lovely way to look at it. And I also really love the way that I think something that you do really well is you kind of break down what creativity means. I think there are sometimes you can talk about, Renee and I often have this debate because she is a big C creative and I'm little C creative, because I think I'm naturally curious and I think I'm a creative person. I'm just not a creative. And I love the way that when asked about creativity, you immediately apply it to things like problem solving, creating new commercial revenue streams for your business, all of which require a level of creativity. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget that and just think about creative as kind of beautiful visual things or that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think creativity is a big topic. And I also think that there's a difference between very wild creativity, which is just, you know, a brilliant random idea, and then creativity that is for business. You know, and I'm definitely much more probably you know, your balance of left and right brain from working with you. And I feel like I'm very much the same. I can be really creative, but there has to be some rigor there. I can't just do some wild idea just for doing a wild idea. So yeah, maybe I'm a little C as well.
I mentioned at the beginning, but just to kind of restate for listeners, that your agency has always been remote first since you created it. So I'd love it if you could share a little bit on, first of all, why you created a remote first agency, but then secondly, as a fully remote working team, were there a set of behaviours that you think stood you in good stead that enabled you to weather this storm differently to, say, more traditional agencies?
Yeah, definitely. So I always had the intention of setting up the business remotely. So for about 8 years prior to setting up the business, I used to help run an organization called She Says. So I helped them after the very first event. It was created by Laura and Ali. And, you know, I was very much involved in that. And I think through that, that was sort of my feminist awakening. And one of the things I could see was a real challenge for gender equality, especially in the creative industries, was flexible working. The office was at the detriment of women's careers. And also, I just felt, you know, even as somebody who's chosen not to have kids, I don't necessarily need work to be flexible because I've got childcare. But it was more the fact that I didn't want to be bound to an office. I didn't really understand the rules of work. It always felt like school for grown-ups work. It's like, well, you've got to be in at 9. If you're a bit late, I'm going to give you some, you can only have X amount of days off per year. And I was just like, with the internet, it just didn't make any sense to me. And I'd been ranting about flexible work. And then I'd been reading a lot about the future of work. And I'd read a lot. There's a guy called Jason Fried, who's had a book out called Remote about 8 years ago, and that was all about remote teams. Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Week. And I think I was just like, I want a business that I can run from anywhere in the world. I also want to run a business where people can thrive. So really, my business model is kind of stealth activism, because I was a bit like, stuff you lot, all these agencies that were saying we can't do flexible working, and, you know, all these challenges. It was almost like I wanted to stop talking and I wanted to actually prove it could be done. I ended up even setting up an event series called A Herd to Run with another woman I know, Vicky Grinnell Wright, who's really focused on future ways of working. And we did a year like an event series, because I actually didn't really know how I was going to build the business with this, because there were no other agencies doing it at that time. So for me, it was a way I wanted to work. And then it's taken a bit of working out. Don't get me wrong, it's not been easy. We've had to remodel all our operations, because if you're working remote first and you're also working, you know, we work with a community of talent who are also all remote first, you have to think very differently about how you operate. You have to think very differently about how you communicate. So there were loads of mistakes and learnings in those first 2 or 3 years. But now it's our normal way of working and we absolutely love it. And I think COVID's been great in terms of showing people what a robust, smart agency we were. Where I think before, people perhaps didn't take me seriously. I think it was like, oh, okay, so it's you and a couple of freelancers working out of your back bedroom. And it was like, yes, but no, but yes, you know. So COVID, I mean, yeah, we have to work completely differently. And it's been fascinating seeing the excuses that I've been seeing. And then also all the agencies where they're all bragging about what an amazing transition they did from, you know, as their sort of PR. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. You didn't have a flexible, inclusive working, you know, environment before, but yet now you want to PR yourselves on it. And it's like, that's been important to us for forever. You know, this isn't a revelation that we've had during COVID. So that's the kind of backstory to it. In answer to your second question, what muscles had we already built? I mean, quite a lot. I think because we're remote first, it means that all my team are not judged by the hours they put in. They're judged by objectives and business impact. So therefore, they have to have really good boundaries, because the rules are you have to be respondent to clients between kind of 9 and 6, right? Most of our clients, you guys, you're working those hours. So you have to be respondent, but your work doesn't have to be done between those hours. So if you want 2 hours off to go and do your yoga class, you do it. But that means you've got to have really good boundaries, and you have to say, I'm going to be offline between 10 and 12 today. So I don't have a culture of people asking me if they can take some time off. I'm very uncomfortable about people asking my permission. I don't know why. I don't feel like I own my employees. I'm not very good with hierarchy. So there's really good boundaries. So people aren't afraid to say, I'm going offline now, switching their notifications off. So I think that's helped, especially with COVID, you know, because there is that, you know, people have had their boundaries. I think we've always had a really agile mentality in the business. So I'm a big fan of the startup world. I'm a big fan of constantly evolving and improving. So for me, the agency's never done. Like, we're never done. We're never, ever going to rest on our laurels. So we always have a mentality of what can we improve. But I'm not a person who's like, we need to improve because we want to create work for ourselves. It's always about how can we just make this more efficient, more effective, so that we can do less work or we can do more of the fun stuff. So I think having that mindset meant that we weren't afraid of things changing because we're constantly changing, evaluating, critically thinking, moving on to the next thing. I think the model, because I've got that what's called the kind of hub and spoke model. So we have a core team, which are, you know what, they're on payroll, they're the consistent people the client gets to see. And then we have our creative community. It meant, and I designed it because I've been through a recession and I didn't want to have a big agency where you have to make lots of people redundant. So we can scale up really quickly when that work comes in. And then when COVID hit, we were able to super scale down. And because we don't have an office, our fixed costs are pretty minimal. I mean, if anybody's thinking of starting an agency, the hub and spoke model is super accessible to, you know, get started. And then I think also I have a real focus on vulnerability at work. So when COVID hit, we would have our Monday morning meetings, but we basically give ourselves a score out of 10 on how you were feeling. And I've always encouraged people to bring their whole self to work. I never liked that sort of work persona. You know, if you're having problems with your kids, you need to be able to share that with your work colleagues so they can help take that pressure off you, or you're feeling ill that day. So we've always been found it quite easy to say how we're feeling. So we started introducing basically a score out of 10. How are you feeling? Sometimes we were 4s out of 10, you know, when then other weeks, maybe one of us was a 7 and one of us was a 5. But that really helped us to judge where each of us was. So there was a real sense of taking care of each other. But I feel like we've always had that as well.
I do the same thing with my team, actually, the score, but I do out of 4 because there's less, you have to be a bit more, like, you have to put a line in the sand. Like, there's quite a big difference as to whether you're on the 2 side of 4 or the 3 side of 4.
Right.
So we use that rating scale, but I think the thing that it made me more acutely aware of, and I only did it when creating a new team during COVID, was that things affect people so differently. Like, the things that affect one person may not have an impact on another, like the weather, for example, or something else. And as a result, you suddenly become so much more acutely aware of all the different things that might be affecting a person's mood or productivity on a given day. And I think the other reason why it's so important to do that is because it disaggregates how you're feeling from your ability to create work. I think sometimes people say, as a gut reaction to how are you, fine, is because they're worried that if they say they're not fine, then the person that they're saying it to, say it's their manager or somebody, will then make a judgment as to their ability to produce output. And actually, if you ask that question on a consistent basis, and it's underpinned with a level of, well, you're still employed by me, there's an element of trust, like the work will continue, it's really good at decoupling and saying, like, I'm not feeling okay, but I'm still able to deliver the work that I need to. And sometimes, myself included, I make that link too strong and feel uncomfortable being vulnerable because I worry it will have an impact on how my competence is perceived.
Yeah, and I think that's fair enough, especially in the traditional working culture, because you're not allowed to show any weakness. You know, traditional working culture was you prioritize that work and you're committed to that person. And I think I've always just thought, I don't own my employees. I want them to be able to weave life around their work. And I think, you know, I think another aspect through COVID that helped is I'm very honest. Some would say too honest, but right really early on, actually before most people, you know, the beginning bit where some people were like, is this a problem? No, it's not a problem. Yes, it is a problem. Like it was sort of half and half, wasn't it? And no one really knew what was going on. And I kind of was like, oh, I think we're going to be in big trouble. And I was just really honest with the team. And I think it shocked them initially, because I don't think they were quite realizing what was going on. But I was like really clear with them. I was like, this is where the business is. This is how much runway we've got, because I wanted them not to feel anxious about their jobs. And I thought, if the business doesn't make it, I want to make sure they've had enough time so they can start, you know, making their own plans. Because, you know, I didn't want 3 months to go and then suddenly hit them with, actually, can't pay you for the next 6 months, you know. So I think honesty has been a really important aspect that's helped through this too.
Yeah, totally. It's so interesting that you say that, because Chris's business, they have become a lot more transparent around like financial goals that they need to hit in a given week or month. And actually, it's been really energizing. I think sometimes it can feel a bit awkward talking about runway and thinking about, okay, well, if we take out office costs, we're here, and this is how we're going to navigate furlough, and here's how many, you know, signups we need within a given week. And actually, it's, if it's harnessed in the right way, it can be incredibly energizing without being falling into those tropes of being like overly aggressive sales environment type thing.
Yeah, I think it's respectful to be honest with people. I think you're treating them as adults, and you're trusting that, you know, even if they don't like what you're saying, that they can handle it. And I also think it helps take the pressure off as a leader. You know, the team are amazing at going, right, well, okay, what do we need to do, when coming up with ideas and being proactive. So it's always the things that are the hardest to do actually make the biggest difference, don't they?
Complete.
You know, the best difference.
Exactly. And I definitely see it in contrast to, you know, where I work with Chris's business, which is more of a scale up now, is that I often get so hung up on like the internal messaging of things, or like the machine where it's like, no, I'm just going to record a video clip and send it to all of my extended remote team and tell them what's going on. I'm like, what? Like, I can't believe it. So yeah, I think you're right though. I think that is the best thing. And I think it does show, it's the same, like the conversations they were having around furlough and plans for moving back into the office. The more transparent you can be, the more respect I think it shows for your workforce and allows them to plan or make alternative arrangements. One of the things that I've heard quite repeatedly throughout lockdown is that it's very hard for creatives in particular, due to lack of proximity, lack of ability to brainstorm in a particular space. And I know that your entire model is not based on that idea. Could you share with our listeners a few of the ways that you think about creativity and how you don't rely on being in physical proximity to make it work?
Yeah, that's been the best excuse, because that was the excuse for a long time with these agencies, that, you know, we can't do flexible or remote working because we all need to be in the office. I think we're just used to a way of working and we have habits. And when you take that away, you just create new habits. So don't get me wrong, being face to face is lovely, but it's not essential for our creativity. I think as you're a creative, I certainly learned to have my own process. Like, I know how to generate ideas, and I know how to generate ideas with a team. So when you do that, it makes it a lot easier. And I think for us, you know, actually, these, your Google tools have been amazing. So, you know, we'll jump on a video call, we'll create a document in, you know, Google Slides or even just a Google Doc, and we'll jot down some thoughts, and we'll be on a video call and in a shared doc at the same time. So like Katie, my ECD, quite often, you know, we've done a bit of creative strategy and we've literally just been on the video call in the shared doc for about 2 hours. And, you know, you're chatting and you're looking at the doc, and that is pretty much the same as being in the same room. So we don't think about it. I find it hilarious. And I think it would be nice to get everybody in the room together. But sometimes you just want to jump on a call and do some stuff. You don't want to have to find a room, travel to the room, everybody gets there. I think our creativity is able to be a lot more spontaneous because you're there and you're immediately can be together through the use of the internet. So, yeah. You know, it's just, it fascinates me, the creative industries, because we are meant to be the most creative, innovative people in the world, and we can't apply our own principles to reinventing the world of work. The irony is hilarious.
Well, yeah, I also have some hypotheses as to why there are a particular group of people looking to make sure that some key beliefs are upheld for their own personal reasons because it suits them, versus them actually being blockers to doing great work and delivering on great creativity.
Yes, I totally agree. We should pick up on that conversation sometime.
Yes, we definitely should. Picking up on the topic of the creative industry's response to things, how do you feel about the creative industry's response to Black Lives Matter? I know that as an agency, you've put in place some really clear commitments in 5 focus areas. And I also wondered whether you'd seen any shift in the businesses that you've been working with, or the kind of briefs that you've been receiving, whether you've seen a commitment to diversity and inclusion and representing the UK population in its entirety more in creative work through briefs that you've got in from brands.
I've got to say, overall, I've been massively disappointed in the creative industries. I am a member of a couple of agency networking groups with other agency founders. And I tackled this response very early on. I said, you know, what are we doing about tackling racism? And was met with a lot of defensiveness. One male agency owner accused me of being on my own journey, like I was on some kind of eat, pray, love sabbatical, you know, being all woke. And I was really quite angry. And I then was like, do you know what? I'm not going to keep fighting in this group. You know, it's just constantly being shot down. No open-mindedness. No, oh, actually, I don't know if I fully understand this. Or a lot of the responses that really reminded me of the early days of She Says, when I was trying to talk about the gender equality, where you constantly get met by there's no problem, or it's defensiveness, or, you know, just not even interested in having the conversation. And I was like, oh my word, we're like here again. And then I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to take my own action. Where do I have influence? I'm not going to keep pushing at these people that are clearly not even open to have this conversation. So, you know, we focus as a team creating our policy, because you have a lot of influence as an agency owner. And I want to do it because I want to be a better anti-racist. You know, I felt like I was doing all right, but even the Black Lives Matter uprising, I realized there's so much more education that I had to do. And I've been doing a lot personally. So I've had a diversity rider for a long time. So I don't ever speak on an all white panel. And I've actively stood down from several panels, actually, and even, you know, not taken pay gigs and put other women forward. And I feel like that's one of the most powerful things that I've done to create change, because it really was a way of these organizations realizing they've made a mistake, but doing it in a way that was got them thinking for the next time, but also made space for somebody else. But I realized that with my business that I hadn't really been focusing on it. I kind of just assumed that because I felt like I was anti-racist, and I'd done a lot of learning from when I'd had the radio show Badass Women's Hour and the conversation I'd had with Natalie Campbell, my co-host. It was kind of in me, but I think that uprising made me realize, no, you've got to set some really like actionable things. I didn't want sentiment. I wanted actions. I wanted things that people could measure us against, that we could measure ourselves against. And also I wanted to kind of give those other agencies a bit of a starting point to create their own policies. But to be honest, I've not seen it. I saw a few that came out, a lot of the big ad agencies. I haven't seen any of the smaller creative agencies release anything. And I don't really see much conversation happening from those either. But I would say that the creative I'm seeing in the mainstream, I think, is becoming more representative. And I am seeing more diverse creative out in the world. So, you know, it does feel like it's happening. But I do think we could be doing a lot more. It's very frustrating, very frustrating.
Yeah, I agree. Like, as a non-white female, I actually feel that a lot of the conversations or pushback that I've had have been frustrating, because they're attempts to be a kind of forced hierarchy of worthy causes, which is really frustrating if you're in that intersectional space. So it's frustrating and then also distracting, because then it seems like everyone in the room is desperately searching for some niche component of their background to show why their angle or their story is kind of worthy of consideration within the broader diversity and inclusion discussion, which ultimately detracts from like core data points, such as what proportion of your workforce is Black, or what's the gender pay gap that you have between men and women. And the conversation ends up being somewhere miles away, and the solution ends up being lots of little things that doesn't feel like it's going to shift the needle. And I've also been frustrated around, yeah, I think there's a level of cognitive dissonance that goes on. Like, I'm really woke. I understand what's going on. I'm going to post on my Instagram about being an anti-racist, but I'm not going to make the tough, hiring decisions, or I'm not going to turn down work or struggle in terms of prioritizing hiring above delivering of work, that changed the composition of my team in a structural way. If it's not happening now, I'm not quite sure when that is going to happen. And I saw a brilliant post the other day by a Black woman on Instagram who said, lots of people have been reaching out saying they don't know any Black creatives. Here's a spreadsheet, but also shame on you. And I thought that was very powerful as well.
No one's willing to be uncomfortable. All of this is uncomfortable. It just is, especially as a white person, because, you know, we've been living in this world that's been totally designed and created for us. And we've just taken that for granted. You know, I'm ashamed of my own ignorance. And, you know, and I can look back on old Emma and just go, oh, my God, there's just so much you didn't know, you know. But like, I just think now with the internet and the access to information that we have now, how can you ignore it? I don't know. We could do a whole podcast on it. And you did, didn't you? You did your Great Allies podcast, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, thank you. But yes, I completely agree with you. And it is completely uncomfortable. You know, every time I use a word in relation to Black Lives Matter, I think, like, am I using the right language here? Because I now know the importance of the precision of language and the impact it has in terms of whether I alienate or don't alienate people that are listening or on the same VC as me and that kind of thing. So I think it's that my favorite ever. This is my like very unsubtle segue to my favorite quote ever by the former CEO, I think, of IBM, which is growth and comfort rarely coexist. So I like reframing that lack of comfort with a sense that I'm growing, because I guess if you're not aware, you wouldn't be uncomfortable. And that means you wouldn't know that there was a problem. So
true. That's a good quote. I like that one.
Get comfortable with being uncomfortable, I think, is where we probably both are on our continued journeys of allyship. So I know that as well as your speaking engagements, running an agency, delivering brilliant creative work, creating industry awards, you also do business coaching. And I wondered if you had seen a shift in the areas that people have been struggling with over the last few months within your network and what your advice to them has been.
Yeah, so I actually offered some free mentoring over COVID because I had obviously all this extra time on my hands. I basically offered to provide free mentoring sessions to any women who wanted to start their own agency. And I ended up doing 35 sessions over the course of COVID. And it was really, really brilliant because there were so many women who had always wanted to start their own agency. And now COVID had really become a catalyst for that, whether they were going to be made redundant or their jobs were definitely at risk, or whether they were just like, actually, it's just made me really think hard. So a lot of it was starting up businesses, those sort of conversations, which I think is really exciting because, you know, I don't know what the percentage of female-owned agencies there are in the UK. I'm not sure, but I know there's not very many of them. So I really hope with the shifts with COVID, and especially when people see businesses like mine, that you know, that kind of model, that, you know, COVID is a brilliant opportunity now for us to create our own agencies and our own culture and our own ways of working from our back rooms. So that's the theme that I've kind of seen, but that's probably my confirmation bias.
It's dawning on me as this conversation goes on that it's kind of like all of these things that you've been challenging have kind of all in one go. Suddenly it feels like, it must feel like the rest of the world has like awakened a little bit and be like, well, yeah, obviously, what do you think I've been doing for the last 7 years?
Do you know what? It's not smugness. I think it's like I've spent 7 years thinking, I must be crazy, because, you know, when you're just like, I must be the crazy one. I'm sure I'm probably the crazy one, but I'm going to keep doing it. And what COVID's proved is actually I wasn't the crazy one. Actually, all my thing about putting people first, remote working, flexible working, you know, the two key things that people are like, no, you shouldn't be that honest and generous with your staff. You shouldn't put them first, you know. And I'm like, oh, no, it's fine, Emma. It's okay. You can just carry on, proceed.
Just being gaslit by the patriarchal
concept. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. I feel like, oh no, okay, yeah, exactly. The gaslighting is gone rather than any smugness.
Exactly. Thank you, COVID, for
for turning the light on. Yeah. Exactly.
The final thing, and I appreciate I didn't ask you this in advance, so feel free to think about it or just not answer it. But one thing that we always love to end the panel show on is whether you have a read, watch, or listen recommendation for our listeners. And it can be completely frivolous. I think I've brought up Selling Sunset and Love is Blind multiple times just to show you the caliber of the content that I watch. So on that note, do you have any read, watch, or listen recommendations for our listeners?
Yeah, I do. I'm a total business geek. I'm trying not to be, but I have been a total business bore. But one of the best books I've read is called Ego is the Enemy. I can't remember the author. I'm sure if you search on Google, you'll find it. But that book was really, really good because I think there's a lot in business around ego and just in life, actually. And if you can understand your ego and the decisions that your ego is making versus the decisions you should be making, I think that does make you, one, I think it makes you happier, definitely makes you a better business owner as well. So that would be my geeky, my business geeky recommendation.
Amazing. And I've just quickly looked it up and the author is Ryan Holiday, I believe. Does that sound right, Emma?
Yes. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Good. And I will also link to it in the podcast notes as well, as well as actually many of the brilliant articles that you've written in the views section of the MYWW website. I think something that I'm constantly so impressed by, and particularly over COVID, is how you're consistently trying to scale and spread the insights and thought leadership that you have and all your knowledge, which I think is generous and sets a really great precedent for businesses sharing with each other, and based on the idea that everyone can rise together rather than somebody rising at the detriment to somebody else. So I love that you do that, and I'll share all of those resources.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Right, well, I guess that just leaves me to say thank you so much for joining. It's been such a pleasure to chat to you, and as you know, I'm such a big fangirl. So,
oh, back at you. Thank you. It's been great to have a chat to you as well. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.